And when you do it with purpose and intention, and you don't succeed the first time or the second or the third, you're going to eventually find a way because you won't give up.
You found your way to the Winning Tactics podcast with host Adam Cinkus. Adam discusses winning tactics with small business owners and entrepreneurs, uncovering processes and introducing the tools and solutions for enhancing the bottom line. Thanks again for finding your way to the Winning Tactics podcast, and now your host, Adam Cinkus.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Tuesday, and arguably maybe the best day of the week because it is Winning Tactics podcast day. Excited for today's show because we are hitting something that I think a lot of business owners, I know a lot of business owners struggle with, and that is growing and scaling your business. Excited for my guest today, Victoria. Welcome to the show. So glad to have you on the show. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me to the show. So I'm Victoria, like Adam said, and I can just say that I grew up in South Korea. I came here as an immigrant. My parents came here, because they thought this was a promised land, America, which it still is. So I'm going to, because of what I accomplished since then. But when they got here, they found out that all of their assets were frozen in both countries. So we ended up with $30 to our pocket for a family of seven. So pretty rough beginning, real humble beginnings. And those humble beginnings kind of helped me shape my view of a small business entrepreneur and also what it takes to kind of, sustain yourself when things get rough. So I basically started a small company, hoping that I could spend a lot of time with my children. A lot of business owners start their businesses so they can have more time with what they love to do or their families. And so I did that. And I wanted to make $2,000 a month. I thought that that would be a great number because, I could pay my rent. I could pay my, insurance on my used car, which I didn't have a payment of. Never thought about owning a home or anything, but I ended up doing $500 million a year, $500 million in total revenue in that time. And so I've definitely sort of overachieved my goal by doing what I love to do. And I also kept my promise. I pretty much worked 20 to 30 hours a week, and the hours that I worked were when my kids were asleep, pretty much. So that's my story, really.
Awesome. Awesome. So glad to have you on the show. Growing and scaling a business is like, it seems like it's this like really easy process, right? But man, it is not.
It's not.
It's not. And one of the things that always baffles me when I talk to business owners in this space is everybody thinks we have to chase like $1 million, becoming $1 million company, yeah, and becoming a $5 million company and all these like dollar and cents roadmap landmarks that really I see a lot of times would put people into shambles. Right. What's been your experience in that space?
Yeah. So basically, as I told you, I just wanted to make $2,000 a month and I wanted to work 20 to 30 hours a week. I did that. I think the first million was really rough. As you know, if you work in that space, the first $100,000 is rough. It's probably the roughest $100,000. And then when you try to get to the seven figures, it becomes really horrendously rough because you have to take so many risks at that point. You got to take customers that that you don't know anything about. Sometimes, you'll go call a department store or, in my case, I call the department store. I call the TV networks. I do all of that. When they give you an order, you don't ask, okay, well, what are the terms? What do I have to do? What's the catch here? You're like, well, where do I sign? Okay. You don't actually even look at that. You're so excited, And then What's even worse, you're out there spending your money, not necessarily on dining, buying things, but you'll then go, oh my God, like my company's growing like crazy. So you start to actually invest in that with that PO. So, I would say hit the pause button and look at it because when you look at, for example, okay, my first order from Macy's, I got an order, I forget how much it was. It was, to me, it was huge at that time. Just the fact that you got an order from, at that time, the largest department store chain in the country. It was like a huge deal. So I get the order, you know, I do everything I can to fill the order, all this stuff, ship it on time. And then I think I got a $500 per, you know, so what they do is they ask you to ship to every store. So mm-hmm. they have like 35 stores and you're supposed to box them as if they're going to 35 different stores, but you put it in one giant box. Okay. You address it to, you know, store one, store two, all 35. And then you put them in the big giant box. So their distribution center can then just go ahead and distribute it. Well, because my label was, you know, at the middle of the box, which I thought would be tamper proof. So I put it in the middle of the box. Well, that was a $500 penalty. They wanted all of the mailing, like, you know, their internal mails to be on the right-hand corner of the box. It has to be a certain size box. So yep. you can imagine $500 times 35, that's just your penalty, right? That's a lot of penalty. There's just a lot of different ways you can get kind of like, you know, a lot of times you don't even ask how much price is, like, you know, oh my God, if I get my products at these department stores, like my life is going to change. So, you know, you take typically a smaller margin and then you don't look at, you know, what it costs to actually ship the stuff. And then you get hit with these penalties. And then when they open the box, there's all these other penalties they can charge you. So eventually, like, you know, that order was like $2,000 per box that was in it. And I ended up paying the $500 penalty. So if you look at the margins, it's not going to be that much. So, you know, I was lucky that I didn't actually lose money on that deal. Mm-hmm. But the point I'm trying to say is, like, when you grow your business, I have a rule, which is you should not have any customer account for more than 15% of your total sales. Because the minute anybody is like half of your business, that person essentially controls when you work, how much you're going to get paid, and mm-hmm. who else you sell to. I mean, that's just bottom line. So you just have to be very careful about how you grow and how you scale. I mean, there is you got to plan your growth.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love the premise of planning your growth, right? Because you can scale really, really quickly and lose a whole lot of money really quickly, right?
Right, right. And also plan your scaling too and scale properly
mm-hmm.
so that that kind of stuff doesn't happen to you.
Yeah, so let's dive into this a little more tactically, right? Because I think it's hard to understand, like, you know, oh, I need to grow and scale. Everybody knows that we need to grow and scale our business, but, you know, what are some of those tactical things that are critical to put in place before I start growing and scaling?
Well, you have to have a system so that, you know, I say that the more a business is dependent on you, the owner, the less likely you're going to be able to scale. Okay. So if the business is dependent on the owner, in other words, all the relationships with your, you know, vendors are with the owner, and a lot of your, you know, relationship with the customers with the owner. So all the phone calls, you know, come to the owner. Well, that means you can't go on vacation. You can't do anything. You know, you got to do everything. And that's the business that's going to be the first one that grows broke, because there's only so many hours a day and there's only so many intelligent decisions you can make without just being exhausted. So I would say that build a system that, you know, all of your employees can implement easily without having to look for you, without having to be scared about, you know, if I make a mistake. And I say, let your employees make some mistakes. I mean, that's how they learn. You don't want to basically give them the whole farm to, you know, you don't want to give them decisions that's going to bet the farm and lose all the money. But if you think about a business, you know, I'm sure you and I, we're podcasters, right?
Yep.
We make decisions every day. 80% of those decisions you make every single day, like what time do we get lunch breaks, you know, which customers to call back, which emails to call, you know, these things are not bet the farm kind of decisions. Those decisions, if you make a wrong decision, it doesn't set you back that bad, right? There are some decisions you make that actually will cost you the farm. So the idea is that you kind of manage your employees, you know, mistakes and so forth. And whenever your employee makes a mistake that costs you money, that is when you actually put something in a system. You know, for example, mm-hmm. years ago, I think it was HSN, one of the buyers ordered a pair of earrings, pendant. She ordered a whole suite of emerald, you know, emerald green for Mother's Day. It's a May birthstone. Mother's Day happens to be in May. So she wanted to run like a Mother's Day special. I happened to have a Colombian emerald. You know, I got a huge lot that I got at a good buy. So she ordered pendant, earrings, pendants, ring, and bracelet. Okay. Well, my employees, when they got the order, they ordered half of them in yellow gold, half of them in white gold. So, you know, like the ring was white gold, the bracelet was yellow gold, the pendant was white gold, and the earring was yellow gold. Okay. Well, the buyer says, well, how does this work? We can't sell it. So she rejected the whole thing. It was like a $300,000 order. And What happened was I ended up having to, you know, tell the buyer, you know, I'm sorry I ruined your Christmas, like a Mother's Day, you know, whole promotion. I had to like apologize, brains out. But I also like talked her into taking it like in December for, you know, holiday. And I had to give her a 25% discount. I had to also guarantee that if whatever she doesn't sell, I'll take it back and melt it down, all this stuff. Well, guess what? That day, I didn't fire my employee because it wasn't really the employee's problem. It was my problem. Mm-hmm. To this day, all of the style numbers in my company all have a YG or a WG at the end of a style number. So now they're forced to look at, you know, what color gold it is. Yeah. For every single, you know, so you basically end up creating the systems by having your employees make those little mistakes, right? Yeah. And so you know, make sure that you are not doing everything. And this is the funny thing, Adam, it's like, as entrepreneurs, we think the more we work, the more money, right?
Yeah.
Actually, I would tell you the less you work, the more money, if you know how to work properly.
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly on that. You know, I'm a big proponent of work smarter, not harder.
Right.
You know, and I love where you're going with systems, right? Because I think, and I've experienced it in my own business, I've experienced it in working with businesses. The number one failure I see early on in businesses is a lack of systems. And
right.
To me, they're really one of the easiest things to create because just as you're doing things, as you're walking through processes, you just document and document and document, right? And those become your systems. And then as you grow and scale, you find holes and opportunities right. In those systems and you clean them up and you make them better and better and better. But, you know, just by documenting right at the beginning, it's like a really, really, to me, a simple way to capture that. How do we get systems in place early and quickly?
Yeah. And, you know, when you use words like systems, innovation, elevate, it kind of scares a lot of the entrepreneurs. It seems like you're inventing something new. Or a system sounds like a $100,000 thing that a you know, a giant company buys. They don't really realize that every company, little company, can have a little system that works for you. So, yep. You know, for example, if you have a little system and you come up with a system, like with my thing, okay, and then a customer doesn't fit. Let's say you manufacture, you have a system, you tell the manufacturers, hey, how much is it gonna cost me to make, you know, this pen, like 100,000 pieces of this pen. And the guy says $30. And you say, well, I can't even retail for $30. I need it for $10. Well, what do I have to do to get it for $10? And the guy says, well, you know, I pay my rent. I do all this stuff. And if you give me a lot of time where I can use my, you know, because all my employees are fixed costs, if I can use downtime and to produce this, I'll use like that time, like when I don't have a lot of orders. So if I tell people I'm going to deliver something to you in 6 months, okay, and the customer A comes and says, I need it 6 weeks. Well, you know, you're going to lose some of those people. And that's okay. You don't have to get everybody. You got to get the right customers that's going to give you the most amount of profits, right? So I would say that the minute you get a large company, make sure that that company is the right company that can help you grow. Sometimes you're used to dealing with mom and pops, you know, 1Z, 2Z orders. And then all of a sudden you get an order for like 1,000 pieces and you're like, oh my God, this is so great. Well, if it disrupts everything that you're already doing and it increases costs because everybody now has to work overtime, then you really didn't do that well. You know what I mean? Yeah. So,
yeah. You know, I'm a big proponent of either not I call it not hiring the customers that are hard to work with and firing mm-hmm. customers that aren't worth my time.
Right.
You know, and it really does frame up the reality of what's important and how to remain profitable. And honestly, there's been a few times over the years where I've tried to start walking through the process of firing a customer, and all of a sudden, you know, the clouds part and, you know, they see the light and they're willing to pay the extra that, you know, you're fighting for, or they're willing to meld into the system. And all of a sudden they become a phenomenal customer to work with again.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And, you know, so you do have to be cautious in that space, right? Because it's really easy for them to also slip back into their old ways as well. But, you know, but once you open that door and you're okay with firing your customers, it can take a lot of weight off your shoulders.
Yeah. You know, Adam, I like to challenge all of you, all of the entrepreneurs. You know, I've been there. Okay. I started my company with no money. I could not even make a single sample. I didn't have any money. I had to like sketch things out and, you know, pre-sell things. So I understand like the importance of like, hey, you know, my business is my heart and soul. I do this because I love it. And, you know, like I make my living doing this. I'm, you know, responsible for all my employees. I mean, you know, I am impacting the world in a way that nobody else can. So I want to do this. I understand that. But let me tell you one thing about what you just said. When you want to fire a customer, here's the deal. If everybody says, okay, in order for us to get, you know, low pricing, let's say if you were calling GM and said, you know what, I want a yellow, you know, a neon yellow dashboard, and I want a purple, you know, steering wheel, and I want this and that. I want it all done in 6 weeks. Okay. That's not going to be possible. They're not going to do it for you. Right. But mm-hmm. let's say if they could, and they did it for everybody who called, you know, it's not fair to the customers who play by the rules, who played in your system. Okay. It's not fair to your employees to have to come in on their weekend with no notice. It's mm-hmm. not fair to your wife who has to sit up and watch you bitch about something. It's not fair to anybody because a customer is unruly. So now, if you look at it this way, where, you know, you have this wonderful family and you get this somebody new coming in who wants to disrupt everything and everything all the time, then you might have to just sit there and say, you know what, we have a beautiful system that works for you. And believe me, Mr. Customer, you know, if you could just give a little and give it a try our way, it works for a lot of people. And it's in the end, it's better for you because, you know, you'll train your people to order on time. You'll train your people to price it on time. You know, it's really going to be much better for you. And if some of those people walk, it might be the best thing for you, actually. You know, so think about it. It's more fair for everybody in your ecosystem to have a system that they can all be happy, plan, make money. And, you know, I think that's good.
Yeah. No, I love it. We're going to take a quick pause here because I want to thank Cowork Hub Virtual. They are part of the reason why this is even possible. It's a really, really awesome platform. This is a virtual co-working space. It totally takes that crazy cold Zoom experience out of the mix and provides a really cool Zoom-like experience. But more than that, it provides a place where you can go and virtually work in an office with other solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, freelancers, consultants, and coaches. So definitely check them out, coworkhubvirtual.com. And, you know, we thank them for their support. So let's shift gears just a little bit, because we've been talking a lot about some of that growth that's, you know, the reason why we struggle with some of that growth. I want to talk about the other side of it, because, you know, there are companies that like hit the ground running and before you know it, you know, they've got like this crazy revenues coming in and they're like running circles and don't even know what to do next. Right. And that can be just as detrimental as not having the tools or the systems in place to grow.
Right. Exactly. Especially if you are, you know, for example, in uncontrolled growth, there's really two ways people go broke. Entrepreneurs can go broke. First way is going broke, which is you don't get enough customers. You know, every time you think you get customers, you lose some. So you can't retain 100% of your customers all the time in most businesses. There's about a 10% attrition rate in every business. You know, people get sick, people die, you know, companies go out of business or whatever. So you have to generate 10% new customers every single year just to stay even. Okay, most dentists, Pilates instructors, they all need 10% extra. But if you don't do that, eventually you are going to go out of business because you're going to go out of business because you don't have, you haven't attracted enough people who are fanatical about your business. The other way you go out of business is you grow broke. And what happens is like, you know, you work your heart and soul, you get that first $100,000 and then, you know, either you spend the money or a lot of entrepreneurs reinvest that money for a bigger fish. And a lot of times, you know, you're growing like crazy, you know, like it happened to me where, you know, I opened Harrods London, I opened Neiman Marcus, I opened, you know, Macy's, all these companies, and I opened up Duty Free. And so, you know, all, if you don't have a system, all these companies have their own rules. Okay, they, for example, if you're a if you're like on an in-flight duty-free on a flight, they the way they measure your success is like dollars per square inch. It's a weight versus because it's a very small space on an in-flight and weight fuel is a huge thing, so they judge you that way. Whereas if you're in a like on a TV station, they weigh you by they judge you by dollars per minute because that's the thing that's confining them. So if you can imagine how when they all you really unless you really understand how you're judged, what the yardstick is, you have no chance of becoming the superstar in that environment. So you got to do your homework. And then the other thing too is like a lot of times your cash flow is so squeezed when you are looking at growing like crazy, okay? One or two people, like back in 2008 to 2010, so many companies, not just real estate companies, they were just cash strapped. You know, I look at people that have, oh my God, I have this customer, that customer, you know, they all owe me money and my sales are great, but I'm not getting paid, you know, because everyone's delaying my payment. In the meantime, I got mortgage, I got rent, I got to pay payroll. And then you're going, you know, you basically get squeezed and you go out of business. You know, there are so many companies that kind of fit in that like Blockbuster Video. There's just so many companies that are big that went out of business. And then you can see a lot of smaller companies in, you know, in your neighborhood that that fit that bill. So make sure that when you grow, you have to grow in a controlled fashion. You know, so if you're going to bring in, like I said, if you're going to bring in a company, like if you're selling like, let's say this pen, it's a cute little pen with a diamond on it, right? So let's say you're selling this pen and you can get $20, you know, like you put it on Amazon and they're paying you pay $20. It's really cute. It's very unique and nobody has them. And so you can sell a you know, package of six for like $39 or whatever. Let's say it costs you only like, you know, $4. If you go to like a QVC HSN, they're going to want you to do like six pieces of it and they want you to sell it for $19.99, okay? Well, if you're going to retail for $19.99, they'll buy it for like $8 max, $7. If it's costing you three per pen, how are you going to sell it for seven for six pieces? You can't. You squeeze your vendor and say, you know what? I got this huge order from, you know, a huge retail, you know, like a TV retailer. I want you to get it for, you know, you got to get it for $1.50. You get it for $1.50, you're still like making a dollar per pack. Well, you go over there and it doesn't sell, or you know, a bunch of people say, you know, that pen broke on me, I don't like it, or whatever, or a bunch of bad reviews, and they say, you know, you shipped 10,000 pieces, and we only sold 6,000. There's 4,000 pieces left, 4,000 packs left, and we got some bad reviews. I want you to take it all back. Okay. Well, if you took the 4,000 packs back, that's more than the profit you made.
Yeah.
Right. So at that point, they're like, you know, you can either take it or leave it, or, you know, we won't pay you. So what happens now is that it now puts pressure on all the other orders. The manufacturer is going, wait a minute, you didn't pay me for the last one. I gave you a really good price on it. I wasn't making any money, but I did you a favor. You know, I charged $3 for everybody, but I charged $1.50. You're telling me you're not going to pay me? Mm-hmm. And you say, well, you know, so what happens is your relationship is soured with them. You know, it just goes on and on and on. So, you know, when you're going to, when you get these orders, make sure that you can withstand some pressures, especially, you know, all the big companies, like, I don't care who you're dealing with, all the biggies, they know your first order with them. You know, the buyers sit there. I mean, they go, that Adam guy, this is his first order. He'll do anything for the first order. They know that. And they'll push and push and push you. Yep. And so make sure that you have plenty of money and that if you get back the $4,000, that you have a place to dump it. I mean, you know, a good way to do it would be like if you're branded product, even if it's not a huge brand, you know, the Philippines, Singapore, Indonesia, all these places will buy it for $1.50. Mm-hmm. So, you know, make sure that you have those lines set up before you ever approach a big guy. And, you know, the other thing I do too is a lot of times when my bigger customers, I do business with all the majors around the world. If they say, I want to buy 4,000, I say, you know what? You know, I love the fact that you love it so much, but can we test it? Just give me 2 stores. Okay. Don't put them in all your stores. Just give me 2 of your best stores. And just buy 400 and see what happens. See how fast it sells.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing. That's a phenomenal strategy. Like that is like right there. You're in the moment. You're limiting your risk
exposure.
At that moment.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's a huge piece there. I want to. So I definitely understand like the product side of it. Like that makes a lot of sense to me. Let's talk about the people side of it too, because you can grow uncontrollably with your team as well. When you start to get busy, you're like, oh my gosh, we're busy. I need to hire these 6 people, you know, that can ultimately cause you to fall flat on your face as well. Yeah. Have you ever experienced that in your own businesses or seen businesses experience that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that I'm so glad you mentioned this because I think a lot of small business entrepreneurs. In fact, my last meeting before I came on this podcast was this very thing. I have a client who needed to hire a graphic designer, but it's a small company. So the person wanted the person to do a little bit of marketing, a little bit of admin, and they put an ad in, you know, like in one of these job posts, and what they hired was an admin person. What they really needed a designer. Okay, here's the thing. Instead of trying to find the positions and, you know, try to fill those positions, say I need these 6 positions, I would argue within reason to hire people first. If you're in a small business, you need people that are very flexible. You need people that are multidimensional that can step in and fill each other's roles because you're not doing brain surgery most of the time. Okay. We're really looking at people that really want to help their customers, you know. So if, you know, highly specialized skills like graphic designers or jewelry designers, it's a different thing. But in most cases, you want to look at top talent, you know, problem solvers, people that think outside the box, you know, who really love, you know, dealing with people and solving problems and, you know, without the money, like money is aside. The other thing too is, you know, when you hire people, I'd say, I'm very lucky because in 33 years, I think I've lost 2 people total. Okay. I run about 30 people all the time. And one retired at age 67. That's how I lost her. The other one went to the Philippines. Everybody stayed with me. So when you hire correctly and you hire the right people and they can do multiple things, what happens is you can grow so much faster because you never have to train anybody. You know, every year they're doing more. They can do so much more because A, you've got a system that they helped you create. And secondly, they're so used to doing it. They don't have to, you know, when somebody, a customer calls and says, hey, I'm Adam, they're not going to go, Adam, what's your last name? How do you spell your last name? When was the last time you bought? They don't have to do that. They basically know who you are. Okay.
Yeah.
So that makes a huge difference. So treat people well, you know, really understand that any business you're in right now, it's a people business. You really have to make sure that you know, treat people well. And because that's ultimately, you're setting that example and that's how they're going to treat your customers as well. And then lastly, I would say when your employees make mistakes, I mean, see that as an opportunity to build a system, create the system, help that employee create the system. I remember that guy I was telling you, he made a $300,000 error. And I mean, he felt so bad for weeks. You know, he walked in the office like with his head down. And he just couldn't figure out why I didn't fire him. He just couldn't figure out why I didn't yell at him. And, you know, he just really took it upon himself to make sure that mistake never, ever, ever happens again to anybody. So I'm not saying that you can never fire anybody. I'm just saying that as a small business entrepreneur, you're asking a lot from your employees to do, you know, you're asking them to think outside the box. You're asking them to go above and beyond. And so that's, you know, important. But having said that, on the other hand, employees can really take advantage of you too. I mean, I've had a couple of employees that, you know, outside contractors who came in with their relationships. So, you know, they wanted to like charge me, I think 15% to 25%, like a commission fee for introduction, this and that. You know, my thing is those people who can open the door right away. This is how a lot of people also go bankrupt. You know, they'll say, let's say somebody comes in and says, you know what, Adam, you know, I see that, you know, you're selling, you know, co-work hub thing. Okay. Well, I know a lot of companies that can do that. Okay. Let's say, you know, I work for, you know, a patent attorney that he does all these companies and I can, you know, sell 300 of these like tomorrow morning. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I want a 15% commission. You can sit there and go, okay, I can have a, you know, rock solid contract. I can get this and I can get the 300, you know, it's not brain surgery. I can do this. The problem is those people usually will take their relationship with them when that relationship ends and you're left in the dust. Mm-hmm. And so I say that, you know, you got to be very careful about the relationship that come like on a plate. It's always better when you build that relationship and have your employees build that, you know, somebody that's going to be really loyal to you.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love that. You know, it's a balance of finding, like you said, the right people, not just people. Right. And, you know, I think in the small business world, there's also the opportunity, you know, when you're talking about contractors, right. You mentioned the graphic designer, right. There's tons of freelance and solopreneur and small graphic design firms that you could contract in to do a lot of that work as well for those one-off projects, right? Now, if you're looking for somebody to come in and do a project every single week, right? You know, then you need to start looking at employment costs. Right. But like, you know, you're like, oh, I just need some stuff for my social media. You know, one project is going to be like 10 or 15 graphics, you know, sometimes it's easier, I think, to just hire those out to a contractor and say, hey, here's my style. Here's what I'm looking for. Can you get this done?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm glad you said this too, because there are some jobs that you need continuity for. Whereas there are other jobs you need freshness in ideas. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like marketing, the creative people, you know, I'm a creative person. I design jewelry for a living. And I think I've done like 15,000 different copyrights that I own. But I will tell you this, most designers, you know, once you kind of like get their feel and they do everything for you, year two, year three, they're still regurgitating their brain. So sometimes you're better off with a freelance designer, freelance person, you know, if social media, like for example, if, you know, like if you're growing your Instagram profile from 2000 to 5000, but then they really struggle between 5000 to 6000, that's probably the time when you make that change with someone. And, you know, when you hire a freelance designer, they already know, you know, they're not going to be your employee. They don't want to be your employee. You know, they're freelance for a reason. So it's good. You know, I like that.
Yeah, no, I love it. So let's shift gears one more time, because one of the things we talked about in our pre-show interview that was really important to you is about the emotional attachment and your customers. Can you talk to us a little bit about your thoughts on emotional attachment with brands?
Oh my God. Okay. So, you know, emotional connection to your customer is everything. You want people to love you. You want people to be fanatical about you. You want people to fall in love with you, trust you, and be your friend. You know, during COVID, I had so many of my customers actually reached out to me. You know, they didn't ask me like, when are you going to be on TV again? You know, or where can I buy your? I mean, they asked me, how was your family? Which is really great, you know? So emotional attachment is really, a lot of people talk about how much they love their customers. I've worked in corporations. I've worked to work with a lot of customers, my customers, because I do a lot of business to business. You know, I work with department stores that say, we love our customers. You know, we even have names for our customers. You know, we have Emma, who's like a millennial customer. You know, we have Esther, who's like, you know, older customer. We have all these customers that we even call her by name. You know, Esther would love this or Emma would love that. Yet, they never really attract their customers on an emotional way. because a lot of your language around how you talk to your customer, it's really important that you build a customer-centric business. If you build a customer-centric business, trust me, the business will grow by itself. My business went from like 100 million to 500 million by doing this one thing. And I'll demonstrate this to you. You know, I go on TV. In fact, I'll be on TV this coming Thursday. When I'm on TV, I usually follow, it's like a jewelry day, and I follow other jewelry designers on the day. So jewelry designer A comes on, and you know, they're all my friends, and so I'm not saying things bad about them. It's just that everyone, a lot of small business owners feel like they're the little underdog. They're the David of the David and Goliath, and you know, they always need to kind of like make it look like they're at par with, you know, the bigger customer. So you keep talking about yourself like, you know, you matter and, you know, you won this award and, you know, you do all this stuff. So instead of talking about you all the time, you have to talk about them. How are you going to solve their problem? How are you going to enrich their life? How are you going to make them feel better? So, you know, when I go on TV and I talk, so person A before me will say something like, oh my God, I'm, and I just love, you know, fall is coming and I just love all the fall colors. And I especially love designing fall color jewelry. And you know what, as a matter of fact, the last time I designed, you know, a leaf ring, you know, I won such and, you know, such and such award from such and such company. And by the way, you know, when I watch Gwyneth Paltrow, all these people on TV, you know, I was wearing my own design and I just love it. Okay. That, you know, so today I'm going to present to you all of my fall collection jewelry. Okay. So I use the word I like all the time in that. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you did this very passionately. Why you do this? If you said the other way, you say, you know what? I love the fact that fall, you know, if you come up and say, you know, thank you so much for, you know, inviting me to your living room week after week. And I know that you guys love fall because every fall, so many of you, you know, are chatting with each other, lifting each other about, you know, meeting your family, you know, people that you haven't seen for a long time and how much you look forward to Thanksgiving dinner. And when that time comes, you can wear jewelry that epitomizes that event. You can wear pieces that you know you're going to get compliments on, and you don't have to break the bank. You know, it's a little, you're meeting with your family and friends. You don't have to be ostentatious. Beautiful little sparkle, little something that's memorable. And today I have this collection. The whole collection was inspired by you so that you could still build those relationships. You could build memories. And when you're done with that, you can leave it to your children for heirloom pieces because it's a part of you. Now, I use the word you like 9 times. I use the word I like twice in that whole statement. Now, in the second presentation where I was talking to them about how they're going to love it, they're going to leave it to their friends and they're getting together with their family and friends. It's almost like I'm actually in their living room sharing that Thanksgiving dinner. Mm-hmm. So what happens is when you're on that day, 24 hours of jewelry, they got a new jewelry designer every hour for 24 hours. One stands out. Which one would you buy it from? Would you buy it from somebody who says, you know, like, I won the award? Who cares? Who's giving the award, Adam? You know, seriously. You can't even remember the name of the award. It's funny. So now, I say this because many of you who are listening to this episode right now, okay, if I went to your website today and I looked at all the messaging, okay, you're not on TV, so you have a website. On your website, if you say, you know, we're the fourth generation jewelers, or we're, you know, I've been doing this for 25 years and, you know, I love helping people and I've helped this person and that person and I changed blah, blah, blah. You know what? Think about how many times you use the word I, because nobody cares.
Mm-hmm.
They care about, now, when I talk about, hey, you know what, when you're getting together with your family and friends, you don't want things that are ostentatious. You want things that are memorable, that has a little spark, you know, that really radiates and permeates your optimism, you know, your personality that you can glow and you don't have to break the bank. Now, that makes me sound like a practical person who understands, who's not ostentatious, who's not a flashy person, who is more like you, right? Yep. So they'll go, you know, that Victoria, you know, she came from really humble beginnings. Now, you know, she's a multimillionaire, and yet she is still so humble, and she's still so relatable. I like her. I want to still buy from her. I want to be a part of her world. So now what happens is like I have people who will actually plan their vacations around my show schedule, even though they can actually, you know, like catch it afterwards, because there's that almost like a fanatical connection.
Yeah.
So if you, what happens now is like my, so here's what happens. The first time I was on TV, I prayed and prayed and prayed that they'll come back the next time I'm there. Okay. I pray that I'll get a repeat customer. They bought a ring last time. I pray that they'll buy a matching bracelet the next time. All right. Mm-hmm. But what happened, that happened. But what happened now is, you know, those people not only came back, but they would tell 10 people to go watch me because I'm this amazing person like who has incredibly beautiful jewelry. And she like speaks my language. Like, I want to leave my jewelry to my kids. And, you know, they don't look like everybody else's because she designs with their feelings. Like basically everything has a feel to that. So now they bring in 10 people to watch me. Then they're also buying for their daughters and other people. So now each person is actually bringing more and more people. This is how I grew exponentially.
Yep.
So, you know, make sure that, and if you build your company, now here's another thing. If I say whether you spend $20 or $200,000, to me, it's the same thing. Like, you know, somebody who's on Social Security who can only pay $20, it's just as precious to her, the emotional connection, right? So you do this. Well, what happens is like, you know, at the end of this whole journey, I look back and I think to myself, you know, if you build a company based on customer centric, you know, because what happens is like when you say, when you are done with wearing this jewelry for the next 30 years, you can leave it to your family.
Mm-hmm.
Those designs have to be so timeless. Now, the timeless doesn't mean they have to be boring. So when I came to the business, all the jewelry that I was able to shop for looked like my mother's jewelry, which looked like my grandmother's jewelry. Okay, they have not innovated or they haven't had to, because it was really mostly sold on snob appeal. Like, this is the 2-carat diamond from Tiffany's and, you know, it's X amount. So it was like a snob appeal. It was never mm-hmm. about how it made you feel. So when I say, how do I make it timeless enough, but still very modern? Well, if you look outside and I have, you know, little hint of butterflies or little floral, you know, hints, you know, it's not an in-your-face type thing, but, you know, tiny little floral prints or little butterflies or, you know, little something. Butterflies and flowers have been on Earth for billions of years before us. They're never going to go out of style. So basically, I build in with what I'm messaging in mind already. I build a product around that. So, so eventually you elevate their customer experience. Then you innovate because you have to find new materials, new way of, you know, putting in butterflies. And some of them are landing, some are in flight, all this stuff. And then eventually when you do that well enough, guess what? You end up dominating your field. And that's how you end up growing super fast. So hopefully that was helpful.
I love it. No, I absolutely love it. I strongly agree, you know. I've said this forever. I'd rather have 10 raving fans than 1,000 followers.
Yeah, right? I agree. 100%.
Because those 10 raving fans are going to go tell the world way more than 1,000 followers that are mildly engaged in my one social account in the world that aren't doing anything others.
Right. So, that's true. That's exactly true.
And raving fans are spending money.
That's, right.
Let's be honest. Raving fans are going to be spending money with you. Yeah. So. Definitely love that. I think, you know, that emotional connection with your customers is super, super important. So I want to get, we are getting to the end of time here. So I always like to wrap up my shows with final thoughts. This is that one thing that people can take away from the show and apply to their business tomorrow. So I leave the floor to you for your final thought.
I would say, really, you know, everything you do, do it with intention. Do it with purpose. And that purpose cannot be about money. You can always go get a job. Okay. That's a fact. You can always go get a job. It may not be your ideal job, but always do it with intention. And if your intentions are straight and your purpose, every decision you make is with the right purpose, things are going to, you know, pan out for you. It will. It has to. Because you're going to make the right decisions. You're going to make everybody, you know, around you feel great. And when you do it with purpose and intention, and you don't succeed the first time or the second or the third, you're going to eventually find the way because you won't give up. You know, if that was your, you know, if it was for the right purpose, you did it with clarity, you're not going to give up and you're just going to get better at it. So I would say, believe in yourself, believe in your purpose and intention, and always, you know, always do the right thing. And, you know, you got to believe in that process and it will work. Because I sit here and tell you, I would love to sit here and tell you, I mean, I was born a genius or, you know, something. I'm not. I'm just a real average person who, you know, was stuck in a horrible situation. And I just decided that I had nothing to lose, really. my father had passed away, and he told me for years and years and years, when, you know, we had everything taken away. You know, they can take away everything, but they can't ever take away your soul, your dignity, your integrity. And without that, you have nothing. And so that's why, you know, like in my company, I have very few turnovers. And I don't think I've ever lost a customer, really. You know, I've actually had to fire some of them. If, you know, some of them was not because they were fault. Like I had a show in Japan and I ended up not going. And I ended up giving them an exit because I just didn't want to fly, you know, 13 hours every month. But, you know, do it with intention, and the world, you know, will be kinder to you that way. And you will impact the world better. And, you know, even if things don't work out, at least you had fun, you know. And the funny thing is, things will work out.
Absolutely love it. I appreciate that. You know, there is greater purpose when you do things for the right intention. Yeah. You know, so definitely recognize that. Where can people find you if they want to learn more and see some of your jewelry and all that kind of fun stuff?
Yeah, so I have a podcast titled Million Dollar Hobbies, and you can, you know, obviously it's to on Apple. You can come to my website. And I forgot to mention, I actually do a lot of free work now. I do a lot of free webinars. I have made, you know, enough money, enough of everything so that I don't have to sell everything, you know. In fact, if you come to my website, you actually, the one thing you can't do is buy jewelry because, like, there are like 70,000 different retailers that actually sell my stuff. So I don't want to be the one to tell you buy some more. You know, it's like a little bit over the top. But you know, I give away a lot of free webinars. I took the six facets you need to master before you can build $100 million or more type of a business. And I break it down to a monthly webinar. So there's one on storytelling, one on premium brand building with no money. All of this is going to cost you no money whatsoever. You're not paying me anything, but you also won't need to spend money to build a premium brand. You don't have to spend money on how to tell your story well, all of that stuff. So, you know, it's a risk-free thing. So come to victoriawick.com. It's Victoria, like Queen Victoria, WIECK.com, and sign up for one of those registration things. The only thing I'll tell you is, like, they fill up pretty fast, and I can't do more than one webinar a month right now because of my schedule is really crazy. But yeah, the first one I ever did, Adam, because I broke it into six pieces. The first one I ever did, I think the first hour I had 300 people sign up, and then like day two, I had 1,000 people. So, and you know, a lot of people say the more the merrier, but what happened was I did the webinar and people that had questions, some of them waited 4 hours to ask a question. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel like that was fair to just like gloss over things. So now I just kind of cut it off when the registration becomes too big. So just kind of, you know, go to the website and sign up for any one of those things, and you'll be emailed on when the next webinar is going to be.
Awesome. Appreciate that. I love when we, you know, we have opportunities to give away some of our knowledge and help others out in their journeys as well. So absolutely. I really appreciate you taking your time today to meet with us and share some of your knowledge in building such an amazing jewelry empire. And, you know, honestly, I'm kind of in awe, really, because, you know, it's a place I'd like to be at some point in my life. And so I learned a lot today. I also want to, you know, thank our listeners, everybody that joined us on the live stream here, as well as those that are catching this on the replay. Don't forget, you can always find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, all the major podcast networks, and YouTube, as well as follow us on all of our social channels. We are on all the places, including LinkedIn, Facebook, and and Instagram and all of them, right? So check us out there. We're always dropping content, and we appreciate everybody's time today. Have a wonderful rest of your week.
Well, that wraps up yet another episode of the Winning Tactics Podcast. You can find Adam on both the LinkedIn and Facebook platforms. And to support the show and ensure the success of the podcast, would you kindly consider visiting Patreon.com/AdamSinkus? We greatly appreciate it. And until next time, from the Winning Tactics Podcast, remember, culture is how your team behaves when no one is looking. Take good care, and thanks for listening.